what you do is a very important thing for the kingdom of God. It's important for the church, and it's super important for the lost. And one of the realities of evangelistic ministry is funding. And so today we want to just speak into your life about this important area, and if I can share something that can help you and your ministry be more effective in securing the funds to fulfill your vision, then I think this will be a very successful morning from my standpoint. Just in terms of the format of what we're going to share on the GoToMeeting page, and you may have gotten some of these documents ahead of time, there are two different outlines. One's entitled Real Life Lessons on Funding Your Evangelistic Ministry, and the other is something I just added yesterday that I wanted to share, and it's something new. I shared it for the first time with the NGA cabinet. We spent a day together about a year ago, and I've tried to just sort of think through what are the essential elements for success in fundraising for evangelism, and I've put them into a formula, which is probably a bad idea, but I did it anyway, and I welcome your feedback, and we'll talk through that as well. So that's kind of the flow of where we're going to go, and as Dave mentioned, we really want to allow for time for questions, and so as you questions come up, please use the question window on the GoToMeeting page, or you can email those to nga@palau.org anytime. So as they say on talk radio, the phone lines are open. Please get your questions in, and that way we can know that we're addressing some of the things that are important to you. So we're not going to talk a lot about detailed tactics today. We're going to be talking about some of the principles that really oversee your work in evangelism. So let's dig in. I did want to just talk for a brief moment about your calling as an evangelist. And I want to affirm it. It is much needed for the kingdom. And you need to be settled on it. And that does a zillion enormous important things. One of the most important roles that we have in evangelism is to get across our own passion and emotion. And if you're settled in your call as an evangelist, you're going to be a lot more effective with that. The other thing about our calling in evangelism and being firm and assured of that is we seem to do things that we don't necessarily like doing. And fundraising, in my experience, is generally not the favorite activity for evangelists. It's actually powerful ministry. I think you will absolutely grow to love it. But if you're sure in your calling, you're going to be willing to do the things that are sometimes outside of our comfort zone and challenging in order to be successful in our calling toward evangelism. In terms of just goals for development, Roman numeral 2 in the real life lessons outline, the goal of having a fundraising function or development department is to fund the ministry that God's called you to. And one of the things that's important is to maybe stop and think about, and we don't do it that often, is what's really important are the dollars, the net dollars for evangelism. It costs money to raise money. And so what's important is the net after costs that can be deployed to further your actual program. And then these three words are words that definitely I keep in focus as an objective virtually every single day. Win, keep, and lift. The development function can be boiled down into our work to win brand new supporters for the ministry, keep existing donors year after year after year, and then ultimately trying to lift their sights and lifting their financial involvement. And so for Roman numeral 3, I want to pull an audible, and we're not going to talk through the elements that are in that outline, but I want to talk through this formula for sustained development success. And I put this together last year. Sadly, we're always so busy, we rarely stop to think about what are the essential elements for success. And I actually took some time and did that and laid them out in this sequence. And so I want to walk through that briefly with you, and then we could elaborate on these things to some extent, though we could probably do an entire hour session on every one of these elements. The first, and where it all starts, is your mindset and your theology about generosity and about giving and receiving. And just a couple of key points there. Number one, God created us to give. It is part of the human DNA. We are designed to be givers. And then Scripture teaches us that when we give, we're blessed. It's a clear principle from Scripture, and it's a clear reality. And I have zillions of personal stories and people who have described the blessing that has come when they give, and especially to kingdom stuff. And then the third, or the final thing I would say about mindset and theology, and this is unique to us, I happen to believe that sharing Christ and seeing someone move from death to life now and for eternity is the most important thing that we can do in this world. I'm called to it, and you're called to it. And so if we have that deep belief and experience, when we are inviting people to invest in our evangelistic ministry, we are unlocking blessing in the life of the donor, and we are unlocking blessing to those that are going to be the recipients of the ministry. It truly is kind of a win-win-win-win scenario. The recipients of our ministry, the lost, win because they move from death to life. The donor wins because they get to invest a portion of what God's entrusted to them in something that's going to make an eternal difference. Our organization wins because we have the financial resource to do the work that God's called us to. And God wins because His purposes are being fulfilled. There's probably other wins that are part of that. But we've got to get our mindset and theology straight. Next thing would be relationships. And if we don't have people that we can talk to and enlist about our vision and our ministry, we're not going to go very far. Mm-hmm. And so it starts with people that are in your inner circle, and you're looking for people that have an affinity for what you've been called to do in evangelism. You're hopefully looking for people that have some capacity to give to your ministry, and you're looking for people that understand generosity. And you can work with people that have not all those things fully formed. God can use you in their life to give them an enthusiasm for evangelism. God can use you in their life to help them understand generosity. There's not much that you can do to shape their capacity to give. But you're looking for people that have those kinds of abilities. And then and you're starting with the people that you know, and then you're starting to bridge out to people that the people that you know. And it kind of builds from there. So getting access to people with relationships is important. Third thing is time, and that comprises a lot of different elements. One is investigate. Get into the lives of the people that you're in a relationship with and understand what God has put in them. What is on their heart? What motivates them? What are their values? Then you want to invest into the relationship. You want to be a personal encourager, an exhorter, a friend. And then inspiration. People desperately need inspiration. And I think that's one of the beautiful things God allows us to be, is we are the good news people. When we share stories of God working, seeing lives transformed, people need that. They are bombarded with messages. A lot of them are negative right now. And so when we can be a voice of good news, that can be really, really powerful. The next element would be our cause. What is it that we are accomplishing in this world? And then in the context of a donor, when they give funds to your organization, what are those funds accomplishing? The next step would be asking. And asking is the number one reason why people give to a ministry. We need to be asking, and we need to be asking often. Five elements to an effective ask, and I would say these elements are in priority order. The most important thing about an ask is the person that's doing it, somebody that has real relationship with the individual. The second element would be kind of the media through which the ask is being made. The most effective asks are face-to-face. A secondary ask would be maybe in an event. And then I would say phone, mail, email, or probably how I would kind of step it down. Third thing would be the project itself. It needs to be something that aligns with the heart of the individual, the amount, and the timing. So if you're asking well, you've got all five of those elements operating properly in the context for this particular donor. An element that I added since I put this formula together a year ago is appreciation and achievement. People need to know that, number one, their gift was received and that you understood and you used it for the purposes for which they gave the gift. They need to know that it was appreciated. We all like to be thanked. Some people will tell you they don't like to be thanked. I don't believe them. So find many different ways to express appreciation. And then the part that sometimes we're not great at, but that's circling back and telling them what their gift actually achieved. It's hard when we're running. We're often jumping right onto the next opportunity. But we need to be faithful to report back to people on the fruitfulness of their financial partnership. And then finally, systems. Systems are the things that allow you to do this systematically, a way that ensures that you're moving forward. That whole principle of donor movement, of winning, then keeping, then lifting your donors, having systems in place to help facilitate that. We have things that we do where when people reach certain milestones, we begin to challenge them to step up to next levels of support. Having your systems assist you with that is important. We have systems that drive our partner program. We have systems that facilitate our thank you processes here at Palau. There's also reporting systems. We measure how our donors are giving, what's happening on an individual basis and on an aggregate basis with our donors to see kind of the health of the organization and what's happening at different levels.
Say, John, before we move on from the ask, a good question here. Question is, how do I know the elements that you just discussed are in alignment? In other words, you mentioned investigate, invest, inspiration. How do I know if I'm asking a person for the right amount of money at the right time for the right project, and can I ask for too much?
Good question. This is the this is where development is an art, not a science sometimes. And I guess my answer to that is trial and error. You use your best judgment, you pray about it, and then you try it, and you'll find out. In terms of the project, I like to talk to people, and sometimes I'll actually preview the ask before I'll actually make the ask. You might, on a visit, say, you know, we've got a certain, for example, for Palau, we've got a major opportunity coming next year to do something in Bogota, Colombia, a city of 8 million people and a very influential city in Latin America. I'd like to talk to you more about that the next time I'm out your way. Would that be something that you'd have some interest in? If they say, yeah, you might be on to the right project. Amount. Look at what they've given in the past. Sometimes donors make gifts that are public. Certainly a lot of institutions actually produce donor lists by different levels. The Silver Key Society has $1,000. You might look at just public sources to see what they've given in the past. It's also subjective to kind of just look at their lifestyle, their home, those sorts of things if you have no track record. And then just pray about it and go for it on an amount. And then the timing can sometimes also be discerned by asking donors, literally, like, when would be a good time for me to bring a project your direction? That sounds weird, but people will tell you. Another way to learn about all this stuff, though, is to make an ask. And asking and having a donor say no, wrong timing, no, wrong project, no, wrong amount, is not a bad thing. It's actually one step toward learning. And I think don't feel like asking is some adversarial transaction. It's actually an important learning point. So there's my summary on elements of the ask. That's a great question. So there's the formula for sustained development success. Keep your questions coming, and we'll talk more about that. Development lessons and practices, Roman numeral 4. These are things that I got mostly from conversation with Luis I had years ago. And I just asked him in the car one time, I says, give me the stuff that you think would be relevant, I'm going to be sharing with some evangelists. And so these are some of the points, and they all start with the letter C. I'm not sure Luis did that or if I did that, and I'm not Baptist, but I did it anyway. Constantly add strategically to your list. There's a principle called having development eyes. Just you're always looking for people. As you read newspapers, periodicals, your local news, you're in churches, you've got your eyes open and you're looking for people that you can add to your list. Getting business cards is fantastic. The best way to get a business card is to give a business card. And I've seen Luis do this time and time again. At churches, he's talking with people in the back, maybe he's signing books, and he meets somebody he wants to kind of stay in touch with. He'll offer his business card. Of course, people will take it. They'll give their business card. You've got contact information that you can begin to follow up on. Point B, center on sharp couples. Luis got invited to speak at a lot of churches over the years. He would identify these people. Sometimes they would find him, sometimes he would find them. But sharp couples that you can grow with for a lifetime. A lot of the members that are on our board of directors at LPA were people that Luis met by speaking in their church. And he just stayed in relationship for the long haul. Co-labor with your spouse. Luis used to get invited to go do like church mission conferences. Some churches still do these, and sometimes there would be like home fellowships that would meet during the week of the missions conference, and so they would go and share in people's living rooms, and there might be, you know, a dozen couples sitting around having dessert, and after the that meeting was over, in the car, Luis and Pat would debrief, say, who did you meet? Oh, I met this guy. He was an engineer with Hewlett-Packard. Oh, wow, great. Write the name down. Let's keep track of this. Who did you meet? I mean, they worked on this stuff together. And many of you are in small ministries where it may just be you and maybe an administrator, and you're approaching this like personal support raising. And people are supporting you as a couple if you're a married person. And so getting your spouse involved is helpful and important. Consider the socioeconomic level of your donors and communicate at their level. For whatever reason, the Palau team has had sort of a more higher educated constituency. And so we have to be careful with our communication to make sure we're connecting at their level. Communicate with a you focus. This is not easy because you're the one that's out doing a lot of powerful ministry, and there's this temptation to say, I went here, I did this, I saw this, I reached this person, I did these things. We try to make the donors the hero. And so to do that, you have to have more of a you focus. Here's what your gift's accomplished. Framing it around them, their partnership. Because you gave, this happened. Those sorts of languages. So make the donor the hero. Consciously realize that women write the majority of checks. This is something to be careful about. A lot of times, if you're you just gravitate toward the person that's your same sex. So, I'm connecting with a lot of guys. Women have tremendous influence. Women write the majority of the checks that we receive at Palau. So when we're writing our letters, and when we're communicating, we got to be careful. We write in a way that definitely connects with women. We phone our donors at the end of the year. We try to talk to literally every single LPA donor in the month of November and December. If they've already given generously, then it's a thank you. If they have yet to give, it's an opportunity to share a project and a challenge for them to invest. If I normally deal with the husband, I intentionally call the house, and I'm trying to reach the wife in December because it's Christmas time. It's just a very good, warm time to be talking with people, and I want to make sure at a minimum I've talked to the spouse at least once during the year. Communicate personally, customize, go overboard. This is an area where smaller ministries, I think, have a great advantage over Palau in your ability to really know your donors deeply. Carve out time to spend with people. Luis did vacations with major donors. He's traveled to Israel with donors. He's gone to Thailand with donors. This one couple that I know he took this trip to Thailand with many years ago just wrote Luis and Pat and said, we've been thinking about our wealth. And instead of leaving funds in our estate plan, we've decided to move up some of our giving now to help you in this season where you're still going strong and you're transitioning to the next generation. These funds can help with that. How cool was that letter? Why did we get that letter? One reason was Luis and Pat did a vacation with these people like 15 years ago. So you've got to carve out time, and you're busy, but you need to spend time with donors. Clarify why. If people drop you, ask them. We try to call everybody that writes us that says, our situation's changing, or we don't like you anymore, or whatever. And yes, we get those contacts once in a while. The best way to deal with that is not to write them a letter, but to pick up the telephone and call them. They are sometimes quite surprised that you are calling them. And you might learn that their issue really was not what you thought it was. And we say to people, you're too important, and this relationship is too important for us to just let you walk away here. And so would you allow us to continue to send our newsletter to you? Would you allow us to continue to communicate with you? So find out why. Capture records, demographic information, biographical information, birthdays, churches, etc. Closely draw them to your inner circle. Share insider information with them. Use the form of media that they prefer. And then I had to find a tough C on this last one. Codify and circulate your plan to your team. So write down your development plan. And I have a message, development principles from the book of Proverbs. It is on my LinkedIn page, so you don't have to ask us to send it to you. Just go to my LinkedIn page. You can download it, and there's a lot of stuff in there from Proverbs about planning, about hard work, and about integrity. So those are some principles, mostly right out of the life experience of Luis Palau, that I think will help your development program.
John, before you move on, question here regarding record keeping. What specific donor development systems should a startup evangelistic ministry look at?
Okay. I am not an expert at all about like the different development software products that are out there. There are new ones coming all the time. We're in a sort of an old Cadillac version called Blackbaud Razor's Edge. In terms of the data elements, you should be capturing, you know, like I mentioned, just basic demographic information on all of your donors. Name, address, every phone number you can possibly get, email addresses, you know, some things about their family, their age. If you can get a birth date, is great, because you can send birthday cards. Oh, and I skipped over that. Do celebrate birthdays, by the way. Pat Palau does the birthday cards. So in terms of like co-laboring with your spouse, Pat Palau picks out these cards herself, handwrites these cards. When you get one, you see, you know, handwriting, get it year after year. I mean, it's important. I have something I can send you that has a laundry list of the data elements that are basic and important. And so if you want to email me, john.ogle@palau.org, I would be happy to send that to any NGA member. So feel free to email me that, and I'll send you a list of the data elements. All right, finally, and then we'll, if we've got any final questions, we'll do it. Potholes and landmines. Okay, these are things that can cause you to blow out a tire, or they could possibly blow you to smithereens. So I love my title. I don't know. I thought that was really inspired. Potholes and landmines. But these are some things I was thinking about that I think are risky deals that we often like fall into. One would be, you finally kind of feel like you've reached the promised land, and you hire someone to be your development director, and you think you can just hire them and forget about being involved in fundraising. Wrong. The reality when you hire someone in fundraising is it may actually ultimately like create just as much work as ever for you. It just might be a lot more focused and meaningful. Also, people need to be managed, and people's lives are, we're in this world, so they have issues. So you cannot hire someone and not stay engaged in the development process. And the reality, if you are the evangelist, you are always going to be critical to building relationships. The good news is you can only be in one place as an evangelist. By hiring staff, you can be in other places represented by your development team. I am a huge fan, if you want to grow, to hire someone who works exclusively on fundraising, preferably someone full-time, preferably someone that is their singular role. And this is tough because you have a lot of things that you need to get accomplished within your ministry. And so when you add a staff person, there's often this tendency to want to make them in charge like operations and development, or program and development, or admin and development. And what I have found in those situations is that guess what, which piece of the job doesn't get the proper attention? The development part. The admin things, maybe because they tend to be more urgent or right now, tends to get our focus, and the work that we do with our major donors drifts. So be careful of this hire someone and forget about development. You're just beginning to grow at that point. Secondly is half commitment. We're not half committed to Jesus. We're not half committed to sharing the gospel. But I see sometimes where we kind of get half committed to development. We want to kind of like sort of half fund it, half budget for it, half listen to consultants. I have people sometimes that are thinking about working with an outside development consultant, and then they don't want to like listen. They only want to half listen, or they only want to like do it halfway, like cut corners. So be careful of that. I think that's a pothole and it might be a landmine. Too much faith in your next video or brochure. We'll spend hours like creating, you know, this video or this brochure that we think is going to change the world. And yes, we need videos and we need brochures, but be careful that you don't spend so much time putting together media and tools that you're not getting out and getting face to face with your donors, particularly major donors. At the Plow Association, we're blessed to have a team of people, obviously. But for example, in my development department, it's a lot more than just me. Praise God for that, because we wouldn't be very far if it was just me. But we have four individuals on the Luis Palau team that spend full-time energy calling on a territory of major donors. These are people that have given, or we think have the potential to give, $10,000 or more a year. Each of these people call on between 80 and 100 of these people, and our goal, and I'm kind of going into lose touch with individual donors, our goal is to visit with these people face-to-face four times a year. So you can get up off the floor now. But we feel that in this age we're in, have you ever heard the expression, out of sight, out of mind? That's true. And if you're only visiting with your donors once a year, I would say it is very difficult to like lift their engagement with your organization. And if you think about it and look back, you probably are noticing that you might be keeping your donors. They might be staying with you. But my experience is you're probably not growing their engagement. And we are assuming that we're going to grow donors' involvement with us every year from year to year when we invest four visits a year in these people. So most of you are both evangelist and development director. Obviously you have to do evangelism, you have to run your ministry. So for you, you probably can't handle 100 major donors face to face. This is why you need to add development staff, and you need to think about what is the capacity that you might have. And you might have the capacity to do 25, where, you know, you would catch these people three or four times a year. So you're going to have to contextualize that to your own ministry, but Be careful about losing touch with your individual donors. Another landmine, or actually this is more of a pothole, no personalization or segmentation. In this day and age of technology, people expect to be communicated with personally. Sending a dear friend letter to everybody isn't working. It can work. I mean, you're communicating, but it's not deep communication. Be as personal as you possibly can. You can't probably write a customized handwritten letter to every one of your donors every month, but use technology to help you communicate as personally as possible. And then segmentation. You know, we are pretty careful about who we mail to. If you have not given to the Luis Palau Association in the last 4 years, you're probably not going to be hearing from us very much. And if you've given more to us, in larger gifts to us, you might hear from us for a longer time. But we segment our mailings, and we look at the recency of people's giving. When was their last gift? And we look at the amount of their last giving. And we, people that have not given us very much money, that haven't given for a long time, we don't mail to. We try to mail every month a letter that tells people what's going on with the ministry, that offers an opportunity for people to invest in LPA. We do 2 newsletters. In our case, it's a magazine a year. And so we're pretty careful about who we mail to. And so use segmentation. Number F, or letter F, all relationship, no ask. It can be the opposite, all ask and no relationship. I've seen that too, but that's more rare, I think. We tend to want to be, I think evangelists have generally very warm personalities. They tend to be extroverted. They love people. They love the relationship part, but they don't love the ask part. And I think you've got to watch that. There's got to be attention given to a specific ask from time to time. And then no systems. You know, we're just kind of winging it. And systems are hard, but they are key to making sure that we continue to do the right thing the right way. So I hope this was helpful, and if there's any other questions, I'd be happy to take a couple more if we've got them.
Well, I got a couple, John, here regarding potholes.
Okay, yeah. Good.
All relationship, no ask. So when in a relationship is it appropriate for me to ask the person flat out for a donation, especially a big gift?
Okay. It can be pretty quick, I guess I would say. I like to not do it on the first visit if I can help it, if I think I can possibly get a second visit. But sometimes we'll go in ready to ask on a first visit if it's a sort of a unique scenario. That would be more the case, for example, if we're raising money in a city from a local person for an upcoming festival. And in those cases, there are times where we will go in with our materials ready. Hopefully, the person that maybe got us the appointment, might be going with us, has relationship with someone. But they may not know a lot about the organization, and so I'm going in and I'm going to present an overview of who LPA is, and I'm going to lay out the project and the opportunity and maybe a table of gifts, and I'm going to ask them to consider an investment. One of the ways to help, and this would be another thing that I'd be happy to send out a copy of, would be one of the tools that we sometimes use to help on the amount as it relates to asking is we will break down projects into a table of gifts. And I am sure you've probably seen these things before. It's kind of like a pyramid where, you know, we need one gift at, say, $100,000, and 2 gifts at $25,000, and 5 gifts at $10,000 to raise $150,000 or whatever it might be. And by having a table with a variety of gift levels, you can put that in front of someone, and you can ask them to consider something in a certain range, and they may say, yep, I'm up for that. They might actually say, hey, what about this upper level? Or they might say, wow, I can do this, but I could do this. So that's one way to deal with how to ascertain amount. But in terms of timing in the relationship, ideally, I would like to make at least a couple of visits before making an ask. On the first one, I'm just getting acquainted. I love to share my testimony, and I love to hear their testimony of how they came to know Christ. And I sometimes will ask them questions about, well, you know, what are the things that God's put on your heart? Where are you currently investing in ministry? Do you have any, you know, this might be a second visit question. Do you have any dreams about what God would accomplish through you before, you know, you leave this earth? And then understand a little bit about what makes them tick. And one of the things that I'll do, like if I have been introduced and make a first visit on someone, with someone, I might say to them, would it be all right from time to time if I connected with you and shared with you some of the specific projects that the Palau Association is doing? And so you're kind of asking for permission to bring them an ask. So that is a nice way to kind of set up the ask. So there's no hard and fast rules, but I like to, in a perfect scenario, I'd like to have a visit or two before I make my first ask. But if there's urgency in the timing of the project, and you've got the shot, sometimes you take it on the first go and realize that this invitation to invest in the ministry is a starting place to build relationship. They can say no now, and they may say yes later once we learn more and build some more rapport. What else do we have, Dave?
Well, we got a hiring question here, probably triggered by the pothole of hiring and not walking away and forgetting it. You've been with Luis Palau 22 years, according to Mr. Jones, which is probably 20 years more than most development directors. How do I find a competent development director like yourself who is committed for the long haul?
That's easy. They're just all running all over the place. What Luis Palau Association did is they hired an executive search firm 23 years ago. And I think it cost them a good chunk of money to do that. And I think one of the board members paid for it. So that would be one way if you wanted to go that route. And they did a lot of scouring this country, looking under rocks for people. I mean, one of the things that is tricky is, but would be ideal, is finding someone that has an actual track record of having done it successfully somewhere. And then you're looking for someone that kind of has a deep affinity for your calling and your ministry. And those people are not easy to find. If they're good, they are probably compensated pretty well. But there are reasons why people want to change locations in terms of ministry. Family issues sometimes come in. Maybe the focus of that, the ministry that they kind of learned in, is not what is their real heartbeat. And so you can do the same things that an executive search firm does, but it takes working through your network. I would get the word out through your board. I would get your word out selectively through existing major donors. These people are hard to find. And there have been plenty of examples of people who have come from industry, you know, secular industry, and been successful in development. I would look for someone that has a successful track record in, ideally, I would say sales is probably the sort of work category or field that is mostly equivalent to LPA, or to, you know, development for evangelism. And it kind of depends on, it also depends on what you're asking them to do. If it's somebody that's going to run an entire program, that's a little bit different than someone that is going to be a field rep. In field reps, you are looking for pure salespeople, not marketing geniuses. People that have run marketing programs are not necessarily people that love to just go knock on doors and sell and play golf and in people's lives and do life that way. So slightly different profile. So those are a few thoughts. I'm a big fan of looking at like who's out there doing it. And you know, you can sometimes find stuff out even by going on people's websites. I was on a ministry website earlier this week, and it had all their development people on there, and it had a picture and a bio. And I actually suggested to a local Christian college here who's looking for a VP of development, I said I would go on to this guy's website, I would look at their people, and I would see if any of them might have roots in the Pacific Northwest and might have a little more seasoning, and they might be good candidates for you. So there's a practical one. Dave, what else?
This is an interesting question.
Maybe I'll have you answer this.
Yeah, I think I'm not, I hope you.
Go for it.
It says, John, do you recommend giving perks? Not too sure what they mean by perks, but do you recommend giving perks to churches and individuals based on their level of giving?
Yeah, perks. Okay. I think I understand what that means. We like to find things that will bless our donors. I mean, that's sort of like the beginning of it. It needs to be something that's going to actually bring blessing. It's not just stuff or goodies. And ideally, if we can find things that are aligned kind of with our ministry, those are the best. So, thankfully, Luis and Kevin and Andrew Palau all write books. And so those books have great content, great ministry content, but it also reinforces the relationship with LPA. So I like to find things that are closely aligned with our ministry. We also do weekends for major donors at nice resorts, which is obviously a major blessing to the people that come, because we pay for it. They just have to get themselves there. But what it really does is it provides us an opportunity to minister into their life. We can teach from the scriptures. We can share where we've been, how God has moved, where we're headed, and then we invite people to make a multi-year financial commitment. And so you might think of that as a perk to a major donor. It is a blessing to them. And I think there is something that the Spirit of God uses to create sort of this spirit of generosity in that context. So, you know, at Christmas time, we have a friend of LPA that has a company that does, there are these kind of angels, they're different, like figurines, angel figurines. And they're cool. You can picture a lot of things when you picture an angel figurine. These are actually cool. And he donates a quantity of those to LPA. And so we send those out to not everybody, but a portion of our donor constituency at Christmas time. And so they receive this from LPA. It's a reminder. It has, you know, it's an angel, so it has some ministry kind of dimension to it. There's generally like a little message, scripture or something that goes with it. So that's how we deal with it. But I don't just do like, I'm not a big fan of like giving them a set of knives or something because they, you know. So try to find things that are aligned with the ministry. Next.
This question, we're always being told to tell stories, touch people's hearts, but frankly, evangelism doesn't seem to resonate with a lot of Christians. So how do we find these people who still weep for the lost?
Wow, good. Yeah, that was sort of what I was thinking about in preparation for this is, you know, we got to be really sure in our calling. I mean, this is a so critical role for the kingdom, yet it is misunderstood and it is underappreciated, and I think it's getting harder, feels like it to me at least. I don't have the magic silver bullet on that one on how to do it. I would say we need to kind of be the instruments of inspiration for that. Keep telling the stories, keep sharing your passion. You know, I'm that, honestly, like with Next Generation Alliance and some of the vision that we have to serve with you guys, we want to like team up on this. And if we can all lift up proclamation evangelism and tell the stories and the fruits of it, that's important. We just one thing that we did recently, we did compiled a book of stories of changed lives, and a friend of the ministry had a vision for it. He funded it. It's just the story of power of the gospel to transform lives. If it helps, there's a conference in New York City next week called Movement Day, which has got people coming from all over the globe. They say maybe 3,000 people. And there are people that are interested in impacting cities. We sent 3,000 copies of this book that every delegate to this conference is going to get. And one of the reasons why we sent the book was we felt like it was important to redemonstrate that when we proclaim the good news, guys that become U.S. senators get saved. Guys like Matt Redman, who were lost, get saved and write worship songs that bless the world. A guy who was going nowhere in Costa Rica from one of the poorest sections of town came to know Jesus and now has one of the largest churches in the country, has planted dozens of churches all across Central America and even in the United States. We got to keep telling the story. I guess I don't have the magic answer other than maybe us doing it more unified and maybe with some focus could be used of God to do that. And so stay tuned for possibilities related to that. Dave?
We're getting, John, close to the top of the hour, so I got a good final question here.
Okay.
So here we are in October with Thanksgiving and Christmas around the corner. What should we be focused on now to help our year-end giving?
Okay. I had a feeling this one might come up. I would say send something out very quickly that does a visual look back on what God has done through your ministry this year. Our magazine is at the printer right now, and hopefully is going to go out here at the end of this month. And then I would be planning to write to your donors right around Thanksgiving with a very compelling project and sort of a very specific ask. You might consider sending a second letter in mid to late December for those that have yet to respond, that have responded in the past, just encouraging them to give at the end of the year. We align emails that go with all of those mailings, so we're not just sending it out, but we're actually emailing out to people. And then we do a kind of look back video that will also kind of be very visual and remind people of the fruit of this past year. And we'll send that via email probably two or three times, starting in mid-December up until the end of the year. I also think it's a good idea to send a email like right at the 11th hour, kind of December 29th, 30th, that just reminds people that you're there. If you have someone that might be willing to offer up a matching challenge, that can add some dynamism to your year end. And then here's the toughest part. Set aside hours in your schedule to phone your best donors. And if you can, phone all your donors. You phone your best donors, get your staff to phone your other donors. And I'll spend a lot of time sitting across Luis's desk, and he'll block out, you know, two or three hours, and we'll just sit there, and we'll have amazing phone calls with people. It's a blessing. So that would be one way to wrap up. Let me give you my conclusion. Faith and belief. Luis shared out of Romans with our development team on Monday, and he was just talking about Romans 4, but this verse was strong. Yet with respect to the promise of God, he did not waver in unbelief, but grew strong in faith, giving glory to God, and being fully assured that what he had promised, he was able also to perform. So this was kind of like where I was coming from with your calling. You've been called to evangelism. God can do it. He will do it. We got to believe in the promises.